This Is Your Life, Season 2, Episode 4. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name is Michelle Cashatt. I'm your co-host, and I'm sitting in the studio today with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hello, Michelle.
I've heard you say more times than I can count. In fact, if I had a dollar every time you said this, I might be a rich woman. You have said, leaders are readers, and readers are leaders.
I think I stole that from John Maxwell.
Oh, sorry, John.
And my guess is he stole it from somebody else. But it's a great saying.
It is, and it's true.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why I like it so much, because it really is true. Have you ever met an exception to that rule?
You know, I probably have, but I can't recall any. Most of the great leaders I know, all the great leaders I know, are readers. Yeah, I think it's true.
Okay, so let's talk about your reading habits for a minute before we get into today's content. About how many books do you read a month? Just about.
Not as many as I would like. My friend Skip Pritchard reads a book a day.
Does he really? I like Skip, by the way. He's a great guy. And maybe it's because he reads a book a day that he's so cool.
I mean, he also doesn't sleep, by his own admission.
Oh, really?
That's why he's able to do it. But I read about 3 to 4 books a month.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do you typically read during the day?
I typically read almost exclusively when I'm running.
Okay.
Which you think, well, so why don't you stumble and fall on your face? Because I'm consuming them through audio format.
Is that how you read most of your books, is
yes.
audio?
Yep.
Do you use Kindle or paper books much anymore?
I use Kindle. I've been reading this book just recently, The President's Club, and I'm reading that on a Kindle because I was spending a lot of time on airplanes, mm-hmm. and that was a little more convenient. And occasionally, if I listen to a book, in fact, frequently, if I listen to a book and I really love it on audio, then I'll get the Kindle book. Sometimes I even buy the physical book as well. Uh-huh. There's still things I love about physical books, but pretty much it's 100% digital.
Now, what types of books do you read? What genres?
Well, I don't read much fiction.
Okay.
Which I don't think is even a good thing. I wished I did read more, but
there is, I mean, there's all kinds of science that talks about how fiction is so good for your brain as far as, you know, storytelling and just even how you kind of put pieces together and process.
I know. I could make the argument to myself, but I tend to read for either self-help books or business books.
Okay.
Or I read a lot of history. I love reading history and biography.
Oh, me too. Yeah. Well, history, to me, reads kind of like fiction
sometimes.
Well, it does. I mean, it's a story. You're reading about other people's lives and their circumstances of their life and everything. So it is kind of like
fiction. And when it's well written, it feels like that.
Uh-huh.
You know? But I do like Stephen King. If I'm going to read fiction, I'll probably pick up a Stephen King novel.
Nice. I did not know that about you.
Yeah.
This is new.
One of my favorite books of all time is The Stand by Stephen King. That will horrify some people. But it's like...
Are you going to get letters?
I know. Well, the original one was almost 1,000 pages long. And in case you haven't read it, it's about a flu epidemic.
I haven't read it.
I read it one week when I was homesick with the flu.
Oh, no.
I would not advise that.
What were you thinking?
I mean, I just imagined like, oh my gosh, do I have anthrax or something? You know, this is a global thing.
Because we just finished talking about how you and I are warriors. So for you to read that while you had the flu,
it was a bad idea.
Me up. Oh man, poor Gail probably had to talk you off the ledge for the next month.
Well, part of it was that she and the girls, we were supposed to have a vacation and I was too sick to go. I mean, I was really sick with the flu.
Uh-huh.
And so I stayed home.
Oh,
they
no.
went on to the vacation. So I'm home all alone reading this book about the flu while I have the flu.
And you're completely
My whole
alone.
World's ending.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that's hilarious. I had no idea. Okay, just so you know, don't do that again.
Yeah, don't. I won't do that again.
So great. Well, today, Michael's going to give us, I'm still laughing. I just can't even believe that. Today, Michael is going to give us the top 10 list. And this list is not in any necessary order, but basically a list of 10 transformational books that he's read, books that have had a huge impact on his life. Now, I have to tell you, behind the scenes, it was so hard for him to come up with this list because He has many, many more than 10 that have influenced,
30,
right?
40, 50.
So you've had so many other books that have influenced your life, and we wanted to narrow it down to 10. And again, like I said, this is not in any kind of order of significance. So, you know, don't worry if you think that one book should be higher on the list. This is not in any order. And he definitely excluded fiction, because fiction is not something that, you know,
That's
other
right.
than our little shout out to Stephen King there, fiction is not really something that he reads very often. So, but this at least gives you as the listener some ideas of some books that have really been transformational in Michael's life, and you may want to add them to your list as well. All right, so let's dig in.
Okay, one other book I have to mention that I didn't include, and we'll get mail on this if I don't, but is the Bible.
Okay, you have to.
Okay.
Which is so true. You have to say the Bible, because if you list 10 books and don't mention the Bible,
like that's
it's a
one
problem.
Book that I read almost every day, and mm-hmm. I'd love to say every day, but almost every day. And so, obviously, it's had a huge impact on my life and a continuing impact on my life. But mm-hmm. let's just say that's the foundational one.
Okay. So that's the 11th, and we'll just add that at the top of the list. So that
Great.
One does get to go at the top.
So no mail, please.
Okay, we've got that covered. Now let's go through the list of your 10 transformational books that have changed your life. What is the first?
Okay. Again, no particular order, but the one I have listed first is Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln by Doris Kearns Goodwin.
You know, I haven't read that yet. It's definitely on my list of to-be-read books, but I have heard so many great things about that.
Yeah, it's terrific because it gives you not only insight to Abraham Lincoln, who was an extraordinary leader, but the reason I listed and what was transformational about it is it changed the way that I think about building my team.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that most leaders think about building a team, they want to acquire people that think like they think.
Yes.
That have the same values they have, that approach problems the same way that they approach them, that have the same strengths. And one of the things, I suspected this all along and was kind of practicing it on my own anyway, but this confirmed it. You do far better as a leader when you acquire people or build a team based on a diversity mm-hmm. of strengths. A difference in approaching problems, different backgrounds, and to be intentional about that and be kind of an architect for building your team, this is a living example of somebody that did just that. All the people that opposed him in the election, before he was elected, you know, he brought into his cabinet, and they would have a vigorous debate.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read the book, but I've read several excerpts, and one of them was talking about exactly that and how he, you know, after he was elected president and those people that opposed him, rather than him making them, labeling them enemies, he actually invited them to be part of the circle. And I thought, you know, it's so contrary to what our natural human nature would do.
Yes.
And yet very, very shrewd, very wise.
Was very, very shrewd. And I would imagine difficult because in an election like that, where all kinds of things are flying through the air, people are making all kinds of accusations. And I don't care how often politicians say, look, I want to keep this on a high level. I don't want to make it personal. They inevitably make it personal. They start attacking mm-hmm. the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly happened in the election that led to Lincoln's being elected. But he was able to get past that and realize the benefit of holding his enemies close, so to speak, and getting the benefit of their best thinking.
How did that particular book, is there any specific ways that it directly impacted you and kind of your leadership, your team?
No, I just think about, it kind of gave me a historical precedent for something that I already believed.
Okay.
And just to make sure that I'm deliberate about that. One of the things that I've used in team building a lot is the Strength Finders test.
Yes.
And I've got a certain set of strengths. Obviously, everybody's got their top five. And so I've tried to be deliberate about that, even when I was in the corporate world. And even now, you know, I've got a spreadsheet of everybody's strengths. Mm-hmm. And so if we get started weighted too much toward one thing, then that makes me nervous. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that we're balanced and that we have, I can't remember if there's 32 or 33 strengths, but I want to make sure that we've got
good collection of
that.
Of all of those. It also would be helpful if you had that in a family, but you don't always get to pick and choose.
Yeah, unfortunately you don't.
You know, but your children.
But it's usually helpful to know that in your family, by the way.
True. Very, very true.
And it does change your thinking to think, like, here's a good example. I'm fairly introverted. My wife is very extroverted, mm-hmm. although we're changing some as we get older. Mm-hmm. But I used to see that as a obstacle. You know, why do I have to be married to an extrovert who wants to go out and get her energy from the crowd and go out in public when I want to sit at home? And that classically would happen after church. Like, so the favorite thing I want to do when I get done with church is I want to leave. You know, I've been with people enough. I want to go to lunch. I want to go home and take a nap. She, on the other hand, if she feels like she's leaves before the last person at the coffee hour, she feels cheated. So she wants to stay till the bitter end.
Makes Sunday maybe a little tension filled.
But now I see that as a huge benefit. That helps a lot for because I'm more introverted. I tend sometimes to be a little bit more introspective and thoughtful about things. She, on the other hand, is very relationally oriented. Well, the truth is you need both those things.
Absolutely.
I tend to make decisions quickly. She tends to make them more thoughtfully. And I can be impulsive at my worst, and she can procrastinate at her worst. But together we balance each other. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about here.
Troy and I have discovered the same. We tend to be so opposite in so many ways. And it is, you know.
Opposites attract, right?
That is so true. And, you know, those things can be a point of tension early on, but then over time it kind of balances out.
Yep.
Okay, so let's move on to another book. Team of Rivals was the first. What's your next
one? This is really a potpourri of titles here. But this one's called The Power of Full Engagement, subtitled Managing Energy, Not Time is the Key to High Performance and Personal Renewal by Jim Lohr. And I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name right. Mm-hmm. This was the first book. I actually read this book, a version of this book, back in the 90s, late 90s. And this book had a huge impact on me because it made me realize that I was in control of my energy level. Mm. Because I think that most people think, well, gosh, if I didn't have a good night's sleep or whatever, that it's all circumstantial, that I don't have any control over that. And sometimes I'm low energy most of the times, and occasionally I'm high energy and I don't really have any control over that. But Jim goes into great detail about kind of the factors that influence our energy level, and that the key to productivity is having high energy.
Okay.
You know, it's not the way we manage time, but it's the way we come to it. Have you ever had that experience where you felt up, you felt positive, and you just whizzed through a task? And other times it feels like you're watching paint dry. You just can't get through it.
Actually, as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking of yesterday here in the studio. So we had an early, early morning. I got up at 3 to fly into Nashville to record these. And yet it was a high energy day. We had so much fun. Everything went so well. And by the end of the day, at 5 o'clock when we wrapped, I mean, on paper, it was a significant chunk of time from the moment I woke up till we finished. And yet the energy level was high, which proved this point that it's really more about energy level for productivity versus time.
Absolutely. And so he talks about very practical things like your diet.
Uh-huh.
You know, that when you eat, for example, high glycemic carbs like white bread, potatoes, pasta, that kind of thing, that's going to have an impact on your blood sugar. And it's going to have an impact on your energy level.
Okay.
Or on the other hand, if you don't get enough sleep.
Okay.
Or if you don't cycle between, you know, pressing hard and then pulling back and resting. And this is why, you know, taking a day a week off or taking our vacations, all that's really important. And it's really the key to productivity.
That's
very important
great.
Book for me.
Good book. Okay, moving on. The third book on your list.
Okay, this one, I love this book. I've read this one several times, but it's called A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, subtitled What I Learned While Editing My Life by my good friend Donald Miller.
I loved this book as well.
I did too.
I really did. I just flew through it. It's the only book that I read by Donald Miller. And I had Blue Like Jazz and I started it, but never really, sorry, Donald, but I never really was able to finish that one. But this one, A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, I loved. It was just so transformational for me.
I found it page-turning. I got lost in it. But more than that, it helped me see my life in a new way. Because what Don does in this is he tells the story of learning kind of the structure of storytelling. And he was very deliberate about that because he was working on a screenplay for his first book, Blue Like Jazz. And so he went to this story workshop taught by Robert McKee, who's trains all the Hollywood scriptwriters.
He's written a fabulous book called Story.
Yes.
Which is excellent.
Dense book. But Don kind of distills all that in a narrative format and teaches you that, look, if your life is a story, you can tell better stories. You could edit your life just like you could edit anybody's stories. So how about being proactive, treating your life like a story, and saying, how could I have a better story? And when you learn the elements of story, which he lays out here, you really can do that. It's a very inspiring book.
It is. So many nuggets. I found, you know, I had a highlighter and I had a pencil and I was marking things all over the book, just rich paragraphs that I would go back and read again and again because they were just so thought-provoking and encouraging and inspirational, and really loved that one.
Yeah. All of his stuff is great, by the way. Like he does a life plan process mm-hmm. based on this. He also does a branding process for corporations based on this. And so he's taken our company through the process for companies, and huge.
And one a conference. Most, he has a conference coming
up
on this as well. So, all right. So A Million Miles in 1,000 Years would be your third book on your list of 10. What is number four?
Number four, this is another book that I've read numerous times.
Uh-huh. Me
I've
too.
I've given it away to conference audiences, to individuals. It's called The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield.
Great book. Easy. I mean, you could just sit and read it.
And it's short,
yeah,
right?
It's very short, but so good.
You could read it in an afternoon.
Uh-huh.
But this is the first time I heard the concept of the resistance. And Stephen's idea is that basically anytime you set out to do something that resembles self-improvement, like you want to lose weight, you want to take your career to the next level, you want to write a book, whatever it is, you're going to encounter resistance. It's kind of an irresistible force that tries to keep you in the status quo. And what does it take to overcome that resistance and make forward motion in your life? He's actually written several books on this topic, but The War of Art is probably the most famous.
Mm-hmm.
He was recently interviewed by Oprah about this title.
Uh-huh. I actually saw a little portion of that. It was good.
Yeah, the book screamed to the top of the bestseller
list
again.
Of course it did.
So anyway, this is one of my favorite books. I feel like it's a book I almost have to read every year.
Uh-huh.
Because
the resistance is always, it's always at your side.
Yeah,
it's one of those that I can refresh pretty easily. And even if I don't have time to read it front to back, I will pull it out and just read a few pages just to remind myself of what I'm doing and that the resistance is expected and how to push through.
Well, he pulls no punches either. I mean, he's very truthful about the creative process mm-hmm. and what you're going to face
mm-hmm.
and what you have to do to overcome it and why you can't give into it.
Do you know, perhaps what I love most about it, too, is he, because he's honest about it and he's a creative as well, it just makes us feel less alone in that process. You know, the creative
totally.
Process can be very isolating, and which is often the scariest part of it, because you're alone in your own head. And what's scarier than that, right?
So true.
And so to know that he totally gets it and understands and he doesn't pull any punches and says it, there's just a little bit of companionship through that process.
Well, and it's important to understand about Stephen is that by trade, he's a novelist.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, he wrote The Legend of Bagger Vance, which mm-hmm. became a very famous movie. And I think it may have been, I may have this wrong, but about 10 years from the time he wrote his first novel till the time he got it published.
Mm-hmm.
So he struggled in the trenches, writing manuscript after manuscript, seeing no visible, you know, validation for his craft, and then eventually persevered to see it mm-hmm. published. And so he's a guy that's a working, I'd call him a working creative,
mm-hmm.
and knows what it is to struggle with being creative.
Yeah. Gives him great credibility.
It does.
All right, number five.
Number five is a book called Love and Respect, subtitled The Love She Most Desires, The Respect He Desperately Needs by Emerson Eggerichs. And I read this with my mentoring group. And it's a book on marriage,
uh-huh.
obviously. But the thing that I liked about it was that he frames what most couples struggle with in their marriage in a way that's really practical. And he gives very clear steps for dealing with it. And what he says, and this is controversial in some circles, not, to be honest, not any that I run in, but some people are uh-huh. have a problem with it. But he says, basically, the number one need that a man has is to be respected. The number one need a woman has is to be loved. And by the way, I think he's very deliberate in saying that the truth is both need both.
Yes.
But there's sort of
a
priority.
But as far as a higher.
Yeah, higher one.
Higher one.
But he says, unfortunately, we get caught in this thing called the crazy cycle. Where
I
I'm,
have no idea what that is.
Well, I'll tell you.
I've never been in a crazy cycle, ever.
So this is a situation where sometimes the man demands respect,
uh-huh.
the woman demands love, and it just doesn't work. Somebody has to go first. Somebody has to decide, I'm going to give that love or I'm going to give that respect.
And even if my needs are not being met right away, I'm going
to
do it first.
And that's just enough to kind of stop the crazy cycle. And get the thing in a positive spin.
Now, did Gail read this book with you?
She didn't read it with us because we read it in my mentoring group. But we actually went to his seminar together,
okay.
his weekend workshop, which we loved. And it had a big impact on the group in my mentoring group. And so she did read it with us, but we didn't read it together.
Yes, not together. But you both then were able to come together as a couple with the same kind of mindset
yeah.
and approach,
well,
which
because,
really created a successful environment.
Well, especially after we read it, we would find ourselves in that crazy cycle and we just kind of throw up a flag and say, wait, stop.
This is the crazy cycle.
You know, we don't
let's not
this.
Do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at some point you're like, yeah, we've done this like 1,000 times. Let's not do this again.
That's true. And I love reading books on marriage, by the way. You know, I have a terrific marriage. I've been married for 36 years. But we work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Troy and I have been married for 14. My parents had been married for 46. And one of the things that they, that really inspired me from them is that they never had to, they never could stop working on it. You always have
always
to be working
you can
on
learn.
It. And it's not like they just arrived someday and it was just a piece of cake going forward. I mean, it definitely got easier in some ways as they learned how to handle situations better, things like that. But they were still working on it up to the very end.
Yeah, I love that. That's
which
inspiring.
Is good. Gives me hope and,
me too.
And encouragement. All right, moving on. What's the next book?
Okay, another book is called Tribes, We Need You to Lead Us by Seth Godin.
Yeah, another good one.
Now, I love almost everything Seth does.
Uh-huh.
I can't think of an exception. His book, Permission Marketing, had a huge impact on me when I read it. I think it was in the late 90s. Maybe it was the early 2000s, but this book, Tribes, was the first book that helped me see the potential of platform building, what we call platform building mm-hmm. now. And it helped me see that the internet has changed everything.
Yes.
You know, having a tribe of followers used to be about physical proximity or ethnicity or common language or all these physical things, but the internet's changed all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can find people that share the same passion, the same interests that are completely around the world. And I have people that listen to this podcast that are, I think the last time I counted was 84 countries.
Mm, wow.
People that read my blog, you know, all over the world. And those are the tribe of people that are passionate about the things I'm passionate mm-hmm. about. But it was Seth Godin that helped me see that potential. And again, it's a short book, but a transformational book. It's usually the first book I recommend to people who are interested in social media.
Okay. You know, his book, I remember when it came out and I remember reading it, I believe on a plane, but it really changed the whole conversation.
It did.
Mean, just the title of the book, all of a sudden people started talking about tribes and it started to be a part of regular dialogue. I just remember how that one book really changed the entire dialogue about the subject.
Yeah, and he's become kind of the granddaddy of that concept.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I talk about tribes in my book, Platform. Uh-huh. I know Jeff Goins has a whole course that
Tribe
has this
Riders.
In, Tribe Riders that has this in the title. But Seth was the one that coined that mm-hmm. term and is really the grandfather of the concept.
Great book. Another, you know, one of those that you just need to have on your shelf.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. The next book on your list.
This one is extraordinary. I read this for the first time, I think, in the 80s. And then it was revised later, but it's called The E-Myth, and now it's called The E-Myth Revisited because this is the revised version, but the subtitle is Why Most Small Businesses Don't Work and What to Do About It.
Oh, I haven't read this. When was it published? Do you know?
It was sometime in the 80s.
Okay.
But I'm not sure exactly when. But if you read it now, I mean, you'll love it because The E-Myth is the entrepreneurial myth. That's
okay.
what he's talking about. You know, the idea that just, you know, armed with your passion to do something, you can go out and succeed. But the truth is most businesses fail. Most
uh-huh.
small businesses fail.
Within the first year.
And he talks about the reasons why and what you can do to overcome that. And he talks about the things that tend to hang up entrepreneurs and why they most often fail. But it's the first book that taught me about the concept of templating. And I think that's my term, not him,
mm-hmm.
his, but templating processes that we use in our business that are recurring. So to be thoughtful about that, for example, the way that we handle email in my company, we know that there is a limited or a finite number of requests or questions that people have.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare for us to get a question that we haven't had before. So rather than reinventing the wheel every time we address that question and somebody having to think up a thoughtful answer to it, we went through, we categorized them, and then I actually wrote a response that was thoughtful, that had helpful resources. So when you write in with that question,
yes.
you're going to get a template.
Uh-huh.
It'll be warmed up and customized a little bit, but my assistants do that. This is to my public email address. But that's templating. And it makes your business more efficient. It improves the quality. It enables you as an entrepreneur to survive.
Mm-hmm. I've started doing more templating myself just because of you as well. So I guess in an indirect way, that book has impacted me as well, even though
I would encourage you to read it. I think you'll love it.
Well, you know, being that I own my own business, my husband owns his own business, I can totally see how it would be a huge benefit.
Most people I know that have read this have said this is one of the best business books I've ever
read. That's great. Okay. Next book.
This one is, I actually had the privilege of publishing, but it was called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. Follow Them and People Will Follow You by John C. Maxwell, my dear friend.
Yes.
I met John in 1998.
Okay.
He had been a pastor. He had written on leadership, had written some really powerful books already by that time on leadership, but he hadn't had a book that broke out. So I was the vice president of marketing at Thomas Nelson, and I got assigned to this project. We met. I loved him. John is very bold. He's very charismatic, but he's also incredibly loving. Uh-huh. He's one of the most generous.
He has such a warm presence about him. And I mean, you just want to sit down and have a conversation.
I do. I mean, he's a hugger. You know, he's just incredibly influential person. But this book.
He's genuine.
Totally genuine.
You know, that's the other thing that I haven't met him. I've seen him at different events and kind of haven't interacted with him face to face. But just watching him, he has such a genuineness about him that you just don't always find.
Well, I really consider him a mentor. He's one of my true mentors, and he's had a huge impact on me. But this book taught me so much about leadership. It was really the first book, I hate to admit it, but the first book I really read on leadership.
Okay.
And it helped me realize that I can shape my leadership, that there are these laws that John talks about, like the law of the lid. You know, that if I don't consciously try to improve my leadership as a leader, then my organization is going to get stuck at the level that I'm stuck in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, many other principles through the book. But it's the number one book that I recommend to people who are new leaders or who want to improve their leadership. I say start with this one.
Good. Good. All right. The next book, this would be number 9.
We did an entire podcast on this book.
Yes, we did.
Called Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less by Greg McEwen. Did I pronounce that correctly?
I don't know. You know what? We actually heard from him after the podcast, and he said we pronounced it right on the podcast, but now I can't remember how we pronounced it.
I hope it was that way.
So, Greg, if we mess it up this time, I'm sorry. Go back to the other podcast.
The thing, and people can go back and listen to that. I can't remember what episode it was, but that's a terrific book. That's probably one of the best books I've read in 5 years. Because he challenged me to look at the clutter that's in my life and to carve out more margin and to realize that everything I say yes to, well, everything in life is a trade-off. And if I say yes to this, then I'm going to by default say no to this. And to kind of reframe for me, saying no. So that when I'm saying no to somebody, I'm doing that so I can say yes to something that has more value to me.
Yes.
You know, if I'm choosing not to participate in that meeting with somebody I don't even know, it may be because it's so I can spend time with my grandkids.
Oh, yes, exactly.
So,
it was such a good book. I really appreciated how he helped me to stop and think about, you know, how am I uniquely wired up, or what are the things that I'm best at? So rather than just because I can do something doesn't mean I should.
Right.
And just because I would have the skills to do something doesn't mean it's the best use of my skills or talents or gifts or whatever. And it goes back to kind of what you were saying with the no, but just to be more strategic in thinking about what would be the best use of my gifts and talents. And not just because it needs to get done, but also what I would enjoy. And that's okay to actually do things that really kind of feed you and energize you and that you feel good about.
Do you see this as a book you'll read again?
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
I could probably read it every year.
Uh-huh. Because I don't know that that process is ever done.
No.
You know, and I always slip back into... There's that part of me that doesn't want to disappoint anybody. So I say yes to all these things that, I can do that. No problem. I'll do that. And I get out of sync with what where I should really be focused.
Yeah. And I think it's just kind of the law of entropy as it applies to life. You know, things tend toward disorder. You know, things that you get organized, you get your life set up, you get your calendar fixed where you've got some margin. Well, I promise you. Margin doesn't spontaneously appear.
No, it doesn't. I've been waiting. I'm looking for the margin tree that I'm going to plant in my backyard.
Lack of margin does happen. Uh-huh. You know, it just you start losing margin and you find yourself back in the same boat. And this happens to me like every 6 months.
Uh-huh. Me too. And I usually have some kind of like breakdown.
Yep, exactly.
And Troy looks at me and says, "You've done it again." And then I have to go back. So yeah, I do think I'll read it again. Okay. What is your final book on your list of 10 transformational books?
This one I also read in my mentoring group, and some of the guys didn't like it. And I'll explain why in a minute. But it's I've read this book about 3 times. It's called The 4-Hour Work Week. Escape 9-to-5, Live Anywhere, and Join the New Rich by Tim Ferriss. The thing I loved about this book, it challenged me on so many different levels, like productivity and, you know, I don't work a 4-hour work week, but I think I'm more efficient and work less than I would if I hadn't read this book. And this was the first time I got introduced to the concept of sort of a lifestyle business where I could shape my business to serve my life. And I saw the potential of, as we've talked about in another episode, about taking a 1-month sabbatical every year. I wouldn't have done that had I not read this book. But it opened the possibility of living a different way, that my life didn't have to be dictated by my career, that I really could build a work environment that served my life and not the other way around.
I know that there's some that saying, well, I can't do that. But it's really possible. I mean, we can be creative. What's hard for us is to kind of open ourselves up to the possibility and just accept that it could be possible. Let's think about it. And this book at least opens that door of possibility.
It does. And I know so many of my friends now who have lifestyle businesses where mm-hmm. they've just decided that they're going to have more free time, or it's going to look like this. They're going to work from 8 a.m. till 3 p.m. and that's all they want to work.
Mm-hmm.
But he, again, as you were saying, opened the possibility, and it starts with that intention to do something different.
This
is a book that'll blow your mind. I think the reason some of the guys in my mentoring group had a problem with it is because it can feel really self-centered in parts. And so we had a big, vigorous discussion about mm-hmm. that. I didn't interpret it that way. And I'm the kind of person that when I read a book, if I come across something I disagree with, it's just for me like eating a steak. You know, I just cut the fat off and leave it on the plate and don't worry about
totally.
It.
Totally. Well, and that probably could be said for any of the books on this list. Just because the book is on the list doesn't mean that you agreed with every single word on every single page. I mean, that's what books are. You sit and you learn and glean different things, and the things that don't apply or you don't agree with, you toss to the side.
It also doesn't mean that I agree with everything they've ever said or ever written.
Yeah, that is true. <know?
laughs> I'm not even sure I agree with everything I've ever written.
I know for a fact for me that I don't agree with everything I've ever written because, you know, we change and we grow.
We do. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So thank you so much for being with us today. If you've enjoyed today's conversation, you can get the show notes and an entire transcript of this episode at michaelhyatt.com. We will be sure to have this list of 10 books at the website as well, so you can print it off and make sure you get those books if you'd like. In addition, if you prefer to watch rather than listen, you can also check out the video at Michael's website. Again, that address is michaelhyatt.com. Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I'd just like to invite our listeners to list their favorite books. It doesn't have to be 10, but maybe 3 books over the last few years that have really impacted you, because I'd like to learn what people are reading and mm-hmm. what's having an impact on them.
Well, I end up adding those to my bookshelf well. So yeah, please leave your favorite books in the comments as well so that we can keep up with you. Again, thank you for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to talk about confrontation and how you can use it to help strengthen your relationships. One thing I've learned as I've gotten older is that when confrontation is handled in the right way, it can make the relationship stronger. And from that standpoint, confrontation is actually a powerful tool for us to have in our tool belt.
Well, I've certainly seen this in my marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like the confrontation is the doorway to deeper intimacy. Mm-hmm. If you're willing to walk through it and willing to learn from it and do it in the right way. You know, as long as there's no confrontation, you can do that if you want to keep your relationship superficial.
Mm-hmm.
But when people start colliding and their interests and their wants and their desires and their backgrounds and all that come in contact with one another, you're going to have conflict. It's inevitable.
That's next time on This Is Your Life.